I've never even asked, how are we doing with this machine? I mean, some of you listen to the tapes. Anybody listen to the tapes? I know that we've sent out some. Okay. Well, hopefully it's going well in terms of that. All right. In this. This.
Just the mic.
Yeah. My biggest problem with this thing is that it's, I mean, it looks like looking over at you guys, you know. This passage that we have been studying, beginning in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 18, is where you should be. It is describing, as it says on the first sheet that we have, that I gave to you, the two mountains. Two mountains. Mount Sinai and Mount Zion. And it is explaining in this passage what we've shown you on this sheet, that essentially the concept that's being talked about is in the very first phrase of the first verse, 18, for you have not come to a mountain. Okay? And then verse 22, it says, but you have come. Okay? To another type of mountain, Mount Zion. Okay, so it's comparing the two mountains, and what it really is comparing is meeting God. Okay, that's what it's comparing. It's meeting God. Okay, and on Mount Sinai, when the people of Israel gathered around at the base of that mountain, they saw the glory of God come to the mountain itself, and it's described there as it is on this sheet. Okay, as well as in the passage itself. It has to do with fear. It has to do with the glory and the majesty of God's holiness. It has to do with huge noises and trumpets and thunder and the very mountain itself quaking. And what it really is representative, as God has actually spoken ahead of time before they came to the mountain, is don't come up to the mountain. Don't touch the mountain, because you are not worthy to come to this mountain in terms of my glory and my power and who I am. You cannot meet with me because of who you are. Okay? You're people of sin. You're people who basically are not in my presence. Okay? But I do want you in my presence, and I am proceeding and moving into humanity, even to this very mountain, so that we can come together. And then, of course, Mount Zion is the mountain that it says you and I, who are believers, who have come to know who Jesus is and the blood of Jesus, essentially that has caused us to move to a completely different position in relationship to God Himself. Okay, and that is described very, very beautifully, and I listed it out for you in number B on that sheet. Okay? For you have not come to a mountain that may be touched. In other words, they could touch the mountain and die, but you can touch the mountain and not die. Okay? And so you have come to Mount Zion. You have come to the city of God. You have come to the heavenly Jerusalem, to the myriad of angels, to the assembly that is the great assembly of all of us who trust and believe in God, to the church of the firstborn. And the firstborn has to do with all of us being the firstborn. We're all firstborn in terms of our new life. Okay? We have come into possession of that new life. Okay? Enrolled in heaven. You and I are enrolled in heaven. And to God, the judge of all, you come to the spirits of righteous men made perfect. That is what we are. We are righteous men who have been made perfect, who can stand and meet God. And the terror of God does not affect us. Okay? This gap that's between us, okay, and His holiness erupting against anything that tries to approach it. Okay? Now, because of the blood, the sprinkled blood, which is the last thing that's said, okay, you and I are able to come to Him. Okay? So that's the beautiful description. It also points out that the people of Israel, when God spoke, the speaking of God's words were so thunderous that it terrified them. They were so afraid. It even says in Exodus 19, where this whole thing is actually described, that Moses himself was terrified. Okay, from the very words of God. Okay, and what we find is that terror has been released. Okay, in relation to us, because that's exactly what it says. However, it does say in verse 25, this is the point. He's shown the two mountains. And now he basically says to you and me, those people who have Mount Zion in their hands, and that is what we have to look forward to, you and I are to make sure that we do not refuse the speaking of God now that we can get close enough and deeply meet with him. Okay, and he speaks to us now. We should not refuse it. Okay, it is a gentle voice now. It's a quiet voice. It's a voice of love. Okay, and you and I are not to refuse it. Okay, and that's what it says in verse 25. See to it that you do not refuse him who is speaking. Okay, see to it that you don't refuse him. Okay, then it goes on to explain, and we've already gone all through this. Okay, I'm just summing it up so we can get into chapter 13. Okay, then it goes on to explain that you and I are given the opportunity. We're given the opportunity to basically live for what is called the unshakable. Okay, we're able to live for the unshakable. Okay, and that's what it says. God at one time had shaken the earth. Okay. And now he is going to shake it again, okay, in that majesty and that power. He is a God who is a consuming fire, the very last verse in that particular section. And he basically states to you and me that you and I are not to refuse what God has said to us about our lives and our relationship with him. And we are to live for those things that are not temporal, but those things that are unshakable. That is what we're to live for. So don't refuse his call upon our life to live for those things on a day-to-day basis that are unshakable. Okay? Now, that's where we are. Okay? In our understanding of this passage. The question that is being raised here is, do you live for the unshakable things, or do you live for the shakable things? Do you live for those things that cannot be destroyed? Okay, or do you live for those things that can be destroyed? Okay, is your energy, is your time, is your life, okay, put into those things that are unshakable? And so that's really the question here. Okay. And then in verse 1 of chapter 13, it begins to play forth some things that are unshakable. And it's asking the question, do you live for this? Okay. These are examples of what the unshakable world is. And do you live for it? Okay. And so that's essentially what's being asked in the passage. Okay? So let's take a look at the passage. You have it in front of you on the second sheet now. So there's a definite presentation by God to listen to him and to not refuse him in relationship to your life, because you have met him. You're now his. You're a part of Mount Zion. Okay? And then it says, don't refuse what I ask of you. Okay? And what I ask of you is to live for those things that are unshakable. while you're on the earth. Okay? I want you to live for those things that are unshakable. Now, this little verse, verse 29, right as it leads into verse 13, chapter 13, verse 1, it says, "For our God is a consuming fire." I know that this has a reference to the nature of God and all of that He is, but in my opinion, it is a kind of reminder of 1 Corinthians chapter 3, okay, where we find ourselves at the Bema Seat and our judgment. Okay, it's almost as though, look, I will destroy everything that is not shakable. I will destroy everything. So make sure that when you stand before me at the Bema Seat and my consuming fire takes your life and examines it and destroys everything that is not shakable. Okay, unshakable. Okay, all right. If you find yourself there, make sure that your life is basically lived for that. Okay, because when you're in front of me, I'm going to destroy everything, a part of your life that doesn't have any worth to it or any value to it. Okay, and what is worth and valuable are those things that are unshakable. Okay. And so that's essentially what you're going to find him talking about. Now, everybody in the room knows that there are only two things that actually are unshakable. Those are people and the Word of God. Okay? So it's people and the Word of God that are unshakable things. Okay? So you have to ask your question, you know, how am I interplaying with the mind and the heart of God as I deal with people every day? And the most trivial event, like a phone call, okay, or anything that you're doing, okay, that has to do with people that are around you, okay, words, encouragements, anything, how you exchange money with a guy at a grocery store, you know, what do you say, how do you look, are you into your own world, okay, or is there anything that goes that is unshakable? Okay, and so that's the question. See? And so those are the things that we have to look at. So the consuming fire of God will destroy all those things that are not eternal, and the eternal are His Word and people. Okay, and how much at the Bema Seat have you actually built into this area that will last forever? So this is very similar to that line of thought. Okay. Now, before we go into chapter 13, starting verse 1, because now it gives you some examples in terms of what your life could do and be, okay, in relationship to the unshakable world. Okay. And at the center of it, it is the very first phrase. And so you kind of look at that phrase and you go, how does that tie in, you know, with everything that's been said before? The first phrase is, let love of the brethren continue. Let love of the brethren continue. That is an unshakable idea. It's something that will stand the consuming fire of God. It is something that a person who is a part of Mount Zion will invest his life in. He will, she will, let love continue, particularly to the brethren. So it's one of the chief concepts of what is the unshakable and what is a person supposed to do with his life. Okay, so that's essentially what you're seeing. Alright? Now, if you take that apart and you look at it, It's very, 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 very similar to what Carlin was talking just a little bit. I mean, I'll just quote that out of Galatians chapter 2, which he just finished this morning. And why does a man live for these things? Why would he let love continue? Okay. The reason he lets love continue is because he's the person who has faith in the Son of God who loved him. Okay. And delivered himself up for me. Okay. So why would I do this besides wanting to have a reward? Okay. The motivation is there at the center of this is God's love himself. Okay. So it's kind of like God saying to you, I loved you, let it continue through you to somebody else. Okay. I gave everything for you and my love for you. And that should change your heart and change what you are and cause that unshakable world to be lived for. Okay. And the reaching out to other people. Let it continue. Okay. And that is a command. Okay. It's a choice. See, it's a choice that you and I have. The word let is a choice. It's a conscious decision to cause love to happen. Okay. And that's what is being said here. Okay. You must make a conscious decision to let love continue to live in you. Because I gave my life for you. You have it there. Make it live. Don't quench it and don't grieve it. That's the Holy Spirit inside of you. Okay. Let it live. Okay. And so those are the things that are the unshakable world that we're living for. Okay. Of course, I mentioned there to you also John chapter 13. And this is Jesus himself speaking about that, which we all know this verse. It is the great commandment for us. Little children, let's see, John chapter 33. You shall seek me, and I have said to you that you will not be able to go where I am. A new commandment I have given to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you love also one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. I mean, that's exactly what 13:1 is talking about. Okay, absolutely the core of it. I loved you. Okay, you have felt my love and you understood my love. Now you allow that love to continue to the brother. And by that, all men will know what this whole process is between us, that you have met me, okay, and that I live, okay, because they can see this love. Okay, so that's essentially what's being talked about there. Any questions on that? Now, what they're going to do is give you some examples, okay, of this love that is unshakable, that is continuing to other people. So that's what you're going to have some examples here as to what this looks like. When you get examples, too often you do not go deep enough into the example and try to play it out in your brain to where it becomes trivial. It's casual. It's just words. But if you allow it to kind of become an illustration, and you get into the illustration, you try to put yourself in there, and what you begin to do is see what it really means, what's there. Okay, so let's take the first example. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. Okay. Now, the question is when's the last time that you presented hospitality to somebody? And particularly a person that you didn't know. If this is not true, you can go across your mind, I can't remember that in the next last year. Okay. If that's not true, then one of the things you would pray for would be, then awaken me so that this would continue. This would start and continue. If this is what I'm supposed to be, okay, then tell me how to be this, okay, in terms of what's going on. Now, if you look at this, you find that love is the unshakable issue, but it's also attached to things like angels, which are definitely unshakable. okay, in terms of what's going on. And so it's telling you, if you enter into this world, if you enter into the things that I ask you to love and become a part of, you actually become the things that are greater and bigger than you can possibly imagine. So if you take the desire to love and ask God, bring me strangers, okay, so that I can demonstrate your love to them. And who knows what these strangers may be. Now, I don't want to say this glibly or whatever. I'm not good at this. I've had to pray over this first, because I don't remember the last stranger I brought or talked to. Okay. Although I really, truly do believe that it is a stranger is somebody that you don't know well. Okay. And I don't know a lot of people well, and yet I know them. Like a lot of my students, I don't know well at all. I know their names, I know their face, I know their work, but I don't know deeply about what's their life. They're a stranger to me. Okay. And so it's asking within the sphere of what you are to reach for those people who are strangers to you and show them love. With my parents, I really don't know people who did this, but my parents did. They would pick up people on the side of the road, you know, and they didn't just pick them up and help them go to the next town. They picked them up and took them home. Okay, and actually took care of them. Okay, and also had them robbed them. Okay, so they picked up people who were not really all that great. Okay, but at the same time, they demonstrated great love for these people. And many of those people that they have ministered to over the years, okay, have become some of their greatest friends. Okay. In other words, they would sit out on an airplane and there was a person next to them who was a stranger. And by the time they had finished with them, they had brought them into their house. When they got off the plane, they went home with them. Okay. So this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a conscious effort and making a move to those people you do not know, or people who are really more strange to you, okay, in terms of what's going on. And I think this is just an area of prayer. I mean, it's a neglected area of prayer, okay, as to what's going on. Now, he uses, the writer uses an illustration of the unshakable world in terms of angels. And we have all sorts of things, and he's referring to a chapter in Genesis where Abraham saw men coming who he did not know. And yet he sensed that somehow or other, by the time they got there, that they were from the unshakable world. They were angels. And two of them were angels. We have them actually described. They're the ones who went into Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay? And they were described as angels. And yet they had dinner with Abraham. The other one was God himself. Okay? We believe that it was Jesus. Okay? In relationship to those three. Okay, so this is what's being referred to as this particular, that passage. Okay, now, all of us, if you study angels in the Bible, what you realize is they are ministers to us. That is what they're for. They're probably for eternity. Okay, which says we will judge angels. Okay. And the judgment, by the way, has nothing to do with good or bad, because they do nothing but good. Okay, so it has to do with the judgment, I think, in terms of tasks and directions, okay, and being given the responsibility of a project for you and I with a bunch of angels. Okay, and so we make decisions and they become a part of what we are. I believe that that's what that's talking about. Okay, but When you look at it, I gave a little sheet there from Francis Thompson. He is the man who wrote The Hounds of Hell. I mean, Hounds of Heaven. Okay, he's the poet who did that, and he wrote a poem that had to do with the presence of God when you do not know that the presence of God is there. Okay, And he uses in the poem the concept that angels have places within the earth that they are actually a part of. It's like their property. It's what they take care of in terms of what's going on. Certainly we see this in terms of Satan. Because out of Daniel, we have a messenger who is an angel sent to Daniel. Okay, and while he has been praying about an issue, this messenger is coming to give Daniel a message from God to answer that prayer. But he's captured in Persia. Okay, that's where Daniel is. He is captured by angels that are demons. I mean, they become demons. And they captured him for 2 weeks. He gives a time frame. And Michael is sent to take him away from that. Okay, in other words, Michael is the one who comes and breaks him out of their control. And what Francis Thompson is telling you in terms of that little poem is, if you really get a hold of this, you understand what Elisha said when he said to his servant, "Let him see what I see." Okay? Because there's an army surrounding the city that came particularly to kill Elisha. And of course, Elisha's servant was sure he was going to go too. Okay, so he wakes him up. He's really, really concerned about the issue. Okay, and he says, "Aren't you concerned?" And he says, "No, I'm not concerned." Okay, and he says, "Yep, but they're here to kill us. And they're going to just toss us over the wall, you know, to get them taken care of." And then he says, "Let him see what I see." And what he saw were chariots of fire that surrounded the enemy. Okay. And so he was able to see the unshakable world, Elisha. He was given that great opportunity. But the point of it is that world's there. I mean, we are so in touch with this that we do not sense that world. And that's what Francis Thompson's poem is. It's almost like he said, there are angels that are surrounding this church that God has sent to take care of the church. You kick a stone and you move an angel because you just kicked his stone. Okay. In other words, it could be that close. Okay, and our participation. And of course, Jesus himself said to Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane, "Put up your sword. Do you not realize I could call 12 legions of angels? And they would interact, okay, with us." So this is what this little verse is referring to. It's referring to the world that it is seeable, okay, though it's not seeable all the time. And it is the world of the unshakable. Okay, not this. Okay. To us, this is reality. God is saying, this reality is not the real reality. Because it's going to be gone. That reality is gone. You must live for those things that are more of the real reality. Okay? And there may be strangers that you should be praying about to be a part of your life, to where you may actually entertain angels. Okay, or you will spread my love, okay, in terms of that stranger. And again, I grew up in that environment. You know, I grew up in an environment where my parents were bringing home these wandering, whatever they were. Okay, but the truth is, I mean, like Josie, who is what is she? South Korean? China? I don't remember. Anyway, she's here in this town. She teaches political science at UCO. And my parents took them off of the plane when she didn't know anything. Brought them home and became friends with them for life. Okay. And that's what you're talking about, Sue. Okay. Those are examples of that kind of thing. And we just don't pray about it, nor do we avail ourselves to the
the ability or the thing to let love continue. Okay, in this way. So you might think about that and pray through it. Okay? Any questions on that before we go to the next example? All right, the next one, number three, is remember the prisoners. Remember the prisoners. Again, these are the, now I would say in their life, okay, in the apostles' life, to work with a stranger and to remember a prisoner was something that was much, much more a daily occurrence. Because these men were moving from town to town, city to city, you know, doing different kinds of things, and they would run into people they had never known before. Okay, and so for them, it would probably be an experience that would be brand new. Just like Peter and John going to the temple and running into this blind man. You know, was it blind man? Or was he crippled? He was crippled. Okay, and they had not met him before. I've always wondered how Jesus missed him. And of course, I know that answer is because Jesus intentionally missed him. Okay, so Peter and John could do this. Okay, but at the same time, that's what you're seeing. You know, you're running into those kinds of people and are part of that. And also, the idea that they were prisoners, of course, we saw Paul and Silas and all sorts of them were thrown in jail. Okay, many of them ended their lives that way, okay, in jail. Okay, so that was what you find themselves. Remember the prisoners as though in prison with them. And those who are ill-treated, since you yourselves also are in the body. Now, I mentioned to you in that verse, as though you were with them. That's the phrase that I picked out, first off. This is a verse that says that you have to find yourself empathizing. Your love drives you to empathize. Okay, and it doesn't mean as though you have to go into the prison. What it means is that you give your life to them in prayer. Okay, you think of them enough to actually pray for them and empathize with them as though you were there. Okay, what would you want from the brethren if you were in prison? And that's to put yourself, you don't casually run by it. You find yourself really, truly there with them. Now, I know that for many of you, you have picked up the gauntlet that God has actually left for you as a challenge to pray for sections of the world that are persecuted. Okay, that's exactly what this is talking about. And this is one of the major issues, or doing something like she was talking about, actually participating in a prisoner's life, okay? Because many of the people that we have associated with are people who become Christians in prison. Okay, then now what does the church do for them? Okay, how is it that we bring ourselves in with them at that particular point? Okay, so those are the kinds of things that are being talked about here, okay? You're not to just pray for them as a general deal. You're supposed to really empathize and try to find some that you can actually give yourself to, okay, in relationship to that. I remember many times that I have read different things that have to do with Christians who have gone, are in prison in China or other places that are being tortured, okay, and when I read those, I try to gather them up with me at least for a period of time to where I'm praying for them. You empathize with what would I want? Okay, I would want some sense inside that somebody cared for me. Okay. They may not hear it or see it or whatever, but I do believe that somehow or other God brings that to them. Okay. Like one of the prayers of this one person was that they would have a banana. They were just craving for a banana. Okay, it was a Christian person, and she was praying for a banana. Okay, but somehow or other, there would be a banana. And what happened was, is a whole load of bananas were dropped right close to her cell. Okay, because it was for the whole group or somebody. And anyway, she was able to grab a banana. Okay, and she was only looking for one. you know, and all of a sudden she has this huge truck back up and drop all these bananas right by her. Okay. And so those are the kinds of things, you know, you're a part of their lives. You empathize. Let love continue. Now, I loved you. I gave myself for you. Okay. Let that same love continue. Okay. And these are illustrations of how that's done.
Would it be stretching to say that it might be somebody? I've read that before, and yes, you can think of prison, but there's other kinds of prisons in people's lives.
I would say so.
Or,
no, no, I would say.
Kinds of things that we could come alongside.
Right.
And
I don't think you would stretch a passage like that. But, of course, I do believe for them this was very, very real. I mean, there are a lot of them who are in prison. Okay. Even at the end of this chapter, it talks about, I think, Timothy being released from prison. Okay, and so it was quite real to them in terms of that. Okay,
there are a lot of them in prison.
That's
today,
exactly right.
It's not real homicidal.
That's exactly right.
They're in prison for their faith.
That's one of the real things that you see here. This is really. These strangers and these type of people are still seen as the brethren, because that's how it starts out. Let your love continue for the brethren. Now it's giving examples in terms of what's going on. Yeah.
Okay, coming from the other side of that law enforcement, mm-hmm. which we are. He was. He is. I was because I'm with him.
Uh-huh.
You know, you think, okay, we're talking about loving prisoners. Some of these prisoners are really bad people.
Right.
I know you're supposed to love the person that hates the sin.
Right.
But I wonder, I mean, we're talking also about Paul and Cyrus and all the biblical people that's in there, people in China that's in jail
right.
because of their belief. So,
were they talking about
Barabbas?
Yeah.
Or were they talking
right.
about...
I would say from the passage itself, it really has more to do with the brethren, okay, in terms of what's going on. However, you never know when one as though, you know, because you have other verses that basically talk about giving your lives for people who are just the way that you're talking about, and that changes them into a brethren. Okay. So you have other directions, but this is probably more for those people who are literally, like you just described them, in China and other places, who are actually the brethren, okay, in terms of what's going on. Okay? Alright, we're finished. Okay. Okay. We will pick up the other two, number four and verse five. And verse five is my favorite one. So that's the reason I studied this passage in the first place. So we will get into that one next time.